Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The corporate world is filled with executives, men and women who have worked hard for years to reach the upper levels of management. They're intelligent, skilled, and charismatic, but only a handful of them will ever reach the pinnacle. As executive coach Marshall Goldsmith shows in his new book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, how successful people become even more successful, subtle nuances make all the difference. These are small, transactional flaws, something as simple as not saying thank you enough, which lead to negative perceptions that can hold any executive back. Marshall, welcome to the program. Let's start with, why did you write What Got You Here Won't Get You There?
The inspiration for What Got You Here Won't Get You There was Peter Drucker. I had the privilege of spending over 50 days with Peter Drucker. I was on his board, the Peter Drucker Foundation board, for 10 years. He said, we spend a lot of time teaching leaders what to do. We don't spend enough time teaching leaders what to stop. That gave me the idea that what got you here, which is some of the good things we're doing, won't get you there, and we need to learn to stop doing some things. That kind of inspired the book.
What are some of the key beliefs of successful leaders, and how can these same beliefs create problems for them professionally?
Successful leaders, and in fact, successful people, have a few basic beliefs. I'll talk about four. Each of these beliefs has helped us become successful. Each of these beliefs is going to make it hard for us to change. The beliefs are, I have succeeded, I choose to succeed, I can succeed, and finally, I will succeed. Let's look at each one. The first one, I have succeeded. Successful people have an incredibly positive self-image. In my work with my clients, I've done this exercise with over 80,000 of my clients who are in training programs. 70% of everybody thinks they're in the top 10%, 85% think they're in the top 20, and 98% think they're in the top half. Successful people have an incredibly positive memory of our previous performance. That's the good news. The bad news is successful people are delusional. And the more successful we become, the more delusional we get. This incredible belief in how great we are gives us confidence and propels us forward. It also tends to make it hard to hear feedback when we need to change. Any human will listen to feedback that's consistent with the way we see ourselves and reject feedback that's inconsistent. As we become more and more successful, we become more and more positive in our remembering our previous performance. It gets harder and harder to hear negative feedback. The second belief, I choose to succeed. Successful people believe I am doing what I'm doing because I choose to, not because I have to. If we do what we do because we have to, we are compliant. If we do what we do because we choose to, we are committed. Obviously, commitment is a good thing. Here's the problem. The more committed we are to a path, the harder it is to ever admit it's the wrong path. You know the old saying, winners never quit? Sometimes it's time to quit. I've had the privilege of working with over 100 major CEOs. Had the unfortunate privilege of working with four CEOs when it was time for them to leave. I said, it's over. Leave. Leave now. Leave with dignity. I failed in all four cases. None left. How easy is it for a CEO to say, I just failed? Doesn't happen. It's hard for committed people to admit we're in the wrong path. Number three, successful people believe I can succeed. Fancy psychological term is self-efficacy. The problem is people high in self-efficacy tend to fall into the superstition trap. What is the superstition trap? I behave this way. I am successful. Therefore, I must be successful because I behave this way. Wrong. Any human or animal will replicate behavior that's followed by positive reinforcement. The more successful we become, the more positive reinforcement we get, and the more we fall into this superstition trap. One of my great challenges with my successful clients is to help people realize we're all successful because of doing many things right and in spite of doing some things that are stupid. And I've never met anyone so good they had nothing on that in spite of list. And the final belief is I will succeed. Successful people are optimists. The problem is optimists tend to chronically overcommit. The huge majority of my clients, I ask them, how many of you feel as busy today or busier than you've ever felt in your lives? They almost all raise their hands. They're chronically overcommitted. And it's very hard for a successful driven person not to bite off more than we can chew and think we can do more than we can. So these four beliefs, I have succeeded, choose to succeed, can succeed, and will succeed, all help make us successful, and they all make it hard for us to change.
What about behaviors that trip us up, that people fall into traps with?
Well, I was interviewed in the Harvard Business Review and asked a question. What is the number one problem of the people you work with? The answer, number one, winning too much. What does that mean? If it's important, we want to win. Meaningful, we want to win. Critical, we want to win. Trivial, we want to win. Not worth it, we want to win anyway. Successful people love winning. I give my clients a case study, 75% fail. I say, you want to go to dinner at restaurant X. Your husband, wife, partner, friend, or significant other wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. Have a heated argument. You go to restaurant Y. It was not your choice. The food tastes awful. The service is terrible. Option A, critique the food. Point out our partner was wrong. This mistake could have been avoided if only they listened to me, 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 me. Option B, shut up. Eat the stupid food. Try to enjoy it and have a nice evening. What would I do? What should I do? 75% of my successful clients, well, what I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up. Have you ever come home after a hard day and that partner at home says, I had such a hard day today. I had such a tough day. And we reply, you had a hard day. Do you have any idea what I had to put up with today? Do you think you had a hard day? You see, we are so competitive, we have to prove that our misery is greater than the misery of the person we live with, and their misery pales in comparison to ours. I gave this example in one class. A guy in the back raised his hand. He said, I did that last week. I asked him, I said, what happened? He said, my wife looked at me. She said, honey, you just think you've had a hard day. It's not over.
The gift that keeps on giving. So why can't we just snap out of it?
It is very hard for successful people not to constantly go through life winning. The next one is related to this. Number two, adding too much value. What does that mean? I'm young, smart, enthusiastic. I report to you. I come to you with an idea. You think it's a great idea. Rather than saying great idea, our natural tendency is to say, that's a nice idea. Why don't you add this to it? The problem is the quality of the idea may go up 5%. My commitment to its execution may now go down 50%. It's no longer my idea. It is very hard for successful people to realize effectiveness of execution is a function of two things. One, what's the quality of the idea? Times two, what's my commitment to make it work? One of my good coaching clients, a man named J.P. Garnier, is retiring as CEO of GlaxoSmithKline. Asked him, what did you learn about leadership when you were a CEO? He said, I learned a hard lesson. My suggestions become orders. He said, if they're smart, they're orders. If they're stupid, they're orders. If I want them to be orders, orders. Don't want them to be orders, orders anyway. I asked him, what did you learn from me that helped you the most? He said, you taught me one lesson. Help me be a better leader and have a happier life. I asked him, what was it? He said, before I speak, stop and breathe and ask myself one question. Is it worth it? And he said, as the CEO of this huge company, 50% of the time I had the discipline to stop and breathe and ask myself, is it worth it? You know what I decided? Am I right? Maybe. Is it worth it? No.
So managing the value of your contributors is the second behavior. What's the third?
The third behavior I call no but however. My favorite clients are stubborn and opinionated people, and this is a classic problem with stubborn people. If somebody speaks to us, the first word out of our mouth is no. What's the message? You're wrong. But, what's that mean? Disregard everything that came before this word. However, fancy word for but. We don't realize how we do this over and over and over. One of my clients was stubborn. I was reviewing his feedback report. He said, but Marshall. I said, that's free. I said, if I ever talk to you again, you start a sentence with no but or however, I'm going to fine you $20. He said, but Marshall. I said, 20. He said, no, 40. No, 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 60, 80, 100. He lost $420 in an hour and a half. At the end of an hour and a half, he looked at me. He's got a great sense of humor. And you know what he said? Thank you. He said, I had no idea. I did that 21 times with you throwing it in my face. How many times would I have done it had you not been throwing it in my face? 50? 100? No wonder people think I'm stubborn. The first thing I do when someone talks to me is I try to prove I know more than they do or that they're wrong.
So, Marshall, how can we systematically approach these problems of behavior?
I'll share a very simple and proven 8-step process to help people change behavior. Step one is get in the habit of asking for input. How can I be a better partner? How can I be a better boss? How can I be a better husband, wife, friend? How can I be a better team member? Get in the habit of asking. And when we ask for input, we set up an expectation. Step two, what else people think we should do next? Listen. And the first thing we want to do is the last thing we should do. What's that? Ask for input, then express my opinion. If I ask for input and immediately express my opinion, what does that sound like? Defensive, denial, rationalization. Learn to listen. Think about what that other person was saying without having the great need to instantly respond and then thank people. One of the techniques I teach is something called feed forward, and it's very important to learn to ask for ideas, listen to the ideas, and just say thank you. Don't promise to change everything, just promise to listen. And then the next step in the process is respond. Well, what does responding sound like? I'm kind of a pioneer in the world of 360-degree feedback. If you ever get 360 feedback, just try this. I'd say, Mr. and Ms. Coworker, we just went through this 360 feedback process. The first thing I'd like to say is thanks to everybody who participated. I don't know who said what. I got a lot of feedback. I know how important it is, and I really appreciate you taking your time. Second, a lot of my feedback is positive, ethical, dedicated, hardworking, caring about our company, our customers, innovative, getting results. These are important values to me. I'd hope would score high and did. I just want to say how grateful I am for all the positive feedback. Then don't say but. Say, and there's something I'd like to improve. What do I typically suggest? Pick one. I'd say in the past I've come off as somewhat stubborn, opinionated, trying to be right. If I've done that to you or the people around you, I'm sorry. Please accept my apologies. No excuse for this behavior. We all make mistakes. It's okay. Just apologize. Then don't ask for more feedback about the past. Ask for ideas for the future. I'd say, Mr. and Ms. Coworker, you know, I can't change the past. I can change the future. If you had to have ideas to help me be a positive and open-minded listener in the future, what might they be? Whatever the person says, sit there, shut up, listen, take notes, and say thank you. Don't judge or critique. Never promise to do everything people suggest. Leadership is not a popularity contest. I'd say I can't promise to do everything you and everyone suggest. I can promise to listen to everybody, think about their ideas, and do what I can. I can't change the past. I can change the future. I can't get better at everything. I can certainly get better at one thing, and I'm going to involve you and ask you to help me do that. That's the next step in the process. Involve the other people around us to help us get better. The next step is change. And can people change? Definitely. Will people change? Maybe. Can you change? Definitely. Will you change? Maybe. The key to making change last can be summarized in one term. You've got to follow up and stick with it. What does follow up sound like? You know, Mr. and Ms. Coworker, last month I said I wanted to be a more positive and open-minded listener. Based on my behavior last month, if you had to have a couple of ideas to help me next month, what might they be? It's been 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. What happens if you do what I just described? Well, this was published in the Journal of Strategy and Business in an article called Leadership as a Contact Sport. Input from 86,000 people showed a very clear pattern. If you get feedback, you learn from those people around you, you listen to what they have to say, and follow up on a regular basis, you are invariably seen as becoming a more effective leader. And if you don't, your chances of improvement are very similar to random chance.
The name of the book is What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Marshall Goldsmith, we want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
This is Bettina Neidhart. I'm the Portfolio Manager for Leadership Development at AMA, and I'm here today with Bob Gulick, the Executive Vice President of Global Business Operations. So, Bob, Marshall brought up this 8-step process. Do you have any thoughts as to that?
I think that's a great process for leaders as they move around the globe. I think they have to be somewhat careful about applying these with flexibility. You can modify the steps for global cultures depending on where you are. Clearly, if you're asking for input from employees wherever you are, that's great for developing leaders, independent thinking, new insights into culture and different ways of looking at problems. You also need to be aware that you're going to get different responses from different cultures. And I think if you approach it with that viewpoint, you can use this process very effectively.
He talks about something that really seems to be very common sense, actually, and we all know that this is something we have to apply. When it comes to business, though, is this something that can be trained? And actually, more specifically, how can this be trained?
It absolutely can be trained, and Marshall Goldsmith has teed up a lot of these issues about not being so dogmatic in your approaches to problems, being willing to listen, being willing to set aside your need to exceed, and being a little flexible. We're currently doing some training in Asia for European leaders who are coming into the Asian environment about the lack of aggressiveness displayed by the Asian leaders when in fact they are quite aggressive in their own environments. This needs to be something that the leadership from Europe is made aware of, that they need to listen to what's going on. They need to be flexible in their approach to dealing with employees and problems. We are running some programs in Asia, for example, called Global Leader Development. These are public forums that we're conducting where we're sensitizing people from other cultures about how to do business in cultures that aren't their home.
We do have a new seminar launching in October, the 21st Century Global Leaders. It's a fantastic program for managers and leaders who are involved in the deployment of corporate strategic initiatives, not just in one, but in multiple countries at the same time, not just to develop the global mindset, but to strategically implement all the way to impacting the bottom line. This is to lead people in other parts of the world, building international teams in multiple countries, and not just to look at these challenges as challenges, but leverage the cultural differences and look at the opportunities in order to create your competitive advantage in several countries at the same time. To find out more about this great seminar, just go to our website at www.amanet.org, key in number 2129, or just key in 21st Century Global Leader.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.